I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
And I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
We're the hosts of Switched on Pop, a podcast about the making and meaning of popular music.
Every week, Charlie and I break down the most interesting hits, trends, and artists to understand what they're doing, what they're saying, and why these songs are so infectious.
We've recently broken down Billie Eilish's music with her brother and collaborator Phineas, dissected Chance the Rapper with super producer Oak Felder, and covered everything from Dolly Parton to Travis Scott.
If you love music, you're going to discover something ear-opening in Switched on Pop.
So join us. Search for Switched on Pop in your favorite podcast app and listen to an episode about your favorite artist.
And subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to get new music explainers every week.
And after listening, you might want to check out our new book, Switched on Pop, How Popular Music Works and Why It Matters at your favorite bookseller. Thanks.
Hey folks, Brian here with a quick PSA. We recorded the show last night, but for some reason there was a problem on my end of the recording. I was able to clean it up quite a bit, but there are some rough spots and it sort of sounds like I'm talking in a tin can. So sorry about that. We'll have better quality next week, I promise.
Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. I am Brian. With me, he's back, Chris McShane. How you feeling, Chris?
Pretty good. Certainly better than the last time you recorded with Allison pinch hitting.
Yeah. It's been a while since you and I have done this together. Let's see. We're looking at January 17th, the last time we talked on the show. So,
damn.
A month ago.
Yeah, that's our puppy Yoda is 8 months old now instead of seven. So yeah. There you go.
that's an eighth of her, of life there.
Yeah. In his experience. Yeah.
But anyway, so this won't be our last show for a month because a week from today, when you're hearing this, Chris and I will be on airplanes going down to Port St. Lucie for 4 days of fun in the sun, doing all sorts of Mets-related things. I am super excited, and I'm sure you are as well. And we're going to try to do a nightly podcast where we put out sort of a show based on what we did that day and sort of things we saw and things that impressed us, etc. We're going to try and hit the backfields a lot. We're going to try and talk to some people. You know, we're trying to make this a really productive trip, so we'll see how exhausted we are at the end of it. Anything that you definitely want to do in St. Lucie that isn't Mets related?
The beer at Vine and Barley is usually excellent. Definitely a craft beer bar, the craft beer bar in that that vicinity, I guess. Uh-huh. So that's always high on the list. Got to go bowling at Duffy's if we can muster up the energy after baking in the sun all day. Not that I'm complaining. It's very nice to get into the Florida sun, even though we haven't had a real snowstorm this winter. Today being 48 degrees with just a heavy fog and mist all day was like, oh yeah, I am looking forward to Florida.
Yes.
So yeah, I'd say Vine and Barley definitely ranks number one. I do enjoy eating Chipotle for like $5 less than what it costs here. That's where I met Wilmer Flores for the first time, was in that Chipotle. I think there was a day that Syndergaard and a couple other guys were eating in there too, back when they were just, you know, prospects, even though Syndergaard was a famous prospect.
Right.
Things like that. It's funny. And I think if we succeed in doing, even if there are many episodes every day that we're there, people get a sense of what we did and all that. But going back, I wasn't there last year, but I've gone six or seven times, maybe even eight. I'd have to count, going back to the first time we went down there. But you know, from afar, and if you're a beat writer who's there for 6 weeks and gets like a week or a weekend of that off to kind of just come back and regroup and then go back down, I understand it's a very different perspective than like dropping in as Amazing Avenue, being like, oh man, 4 days, we're not in the Northeast, you know, it's
yeah,
late February, the sun is glorious, the like we get to do this baseball stuff. So I understand that their perspective can be like, oh man, there's nothing to do in St. Lucie. But in that sort of like turbo mode that I've been in and we will be in when we're down there, of just like, oh man, this is great. Take a million photos, talk to whoever we can talk to, go back, like try to write that down, try to organize these photos, and take advantage of the ballpark Wi-Fi being 100 times better than any hotel.
Yes.
And, you know, do all that and then go eat. And then you get to, you know, before you know it, the days go by. So in my experience of doing this trip, I'm never like, oh man, there's nothing to do here, because it's a lot of work during the day, but it's totally vacation mode, combined with that.
Yes.
So there was 1 year, a cousin of mine, came down, big Mets fan. And he asked to like tag along, and you know, with the room that we had gotten, my dad and I, and you know, he like, but on the second morning, he was like, he's like, I knew you did stuff down here, but he was like, damn, I didn't realize how much work you do, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess when you're trying to just collect as much as you can in a short span of time, St. Lucie never feels boring to me. And I'm also, I'm not like, all right, I'm going to go have, you know, dinner or drinks at the same place I've been going to every night for 6 weeks or regularly for 6 weeks. So yeah, that's my little pre-spring training spiel.
I have a very specific thing I want to do.
All right.
Which is, so I have an aunt who lives in Port St. Lucie. She's a snowbird. She's down there half the year. And I have an uncle who's a snowbird who lives in Stewart, which is right down the road from there. And there's a little town called Port Salerno that is on the side of Stewart. And he and I went there, and I had the best fish and chips I've ever had in my life. And I've been thinking about those fish and chips for like 10 months now. And so at some point... I want to go with him and get those fish and chips again.
Okay, yeah, I, you know, and this isn't exactly groundbreaking, but I learned to get into and appreciate fish and chips, like, within the last few years, so...
Oh, so you're in, is what you're saying.
yeah, no, but with that much praise, I am intrigued. I think, yeah. I want to give it a shot.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, we have plenty of time to discuss all the food options that we'll be having down there. Anyway, let's get into it. So we were thinking that this would be a good time to sort of take stock of where we think the team is a week out from spring training. So we are going to be talking about just our general thoughts and feelings about the Mets right now. You know, we're getting all these articles... and these news reports coming out of St. Lucie with, you know, the ubiquitous so-and-so is in the best shape of their lives, updates, you know, Familia's dropped a bunch of weight. You told me before we started recording that Stroman hired away the Blue Jays, like, conditioning guy. You know, there are lots of stories like that. So with all of that sort of, you know, positivity overload, how are you feeling right now about this team? Do you feel like this team is... in a better position to win than they were perhaps a year ago?
Yeah, I'd say overall they're in a better position to win. You know, part of that probably has to do with things that have happened around the division. And I don't think the Marlins should be written off entirely, of course. I don't think any other team can be written off. But the way things have changed, you know, losing Anthony Rendon is more significant in my eyes than losing Zach Wheeler.
Agreed.
I think even Wheeler's biggest supporters would agree with that statement. But yeah, I guess I'm still just a little apprehensive. Like, I know what the second half was like last year, but I guess for somebody who wants to say, hey, don't take Zach Wheeler's second half, especially from 2018, too seriously. Like, yes, it happened, but it was still not, you know, it wasn't that level for a year or 2 years or 3 years. It was that level for 2.5 months, that kind of thing. So if I'm saying that about a player, then I guess I'm still just a little apprehensive when it comes to going all in on, hey, the second half Mets. Like, of course I want that. That would be fantastic. If they played like that for a full season, we wouldn't even be stressing until October. So yeah, I think they will be competitive and they will be good. But I still just worry about, like, I think DeGrom, Syndergaard, Stroman will be excellent, all three of them. But then I worry about Mats and Porcello, and then if Waka gets into the mix there with some starts, or maybe lots of starts, who knows. But I'm just apprehensive with the back of the rotation and the uncertainty of the bullpen. You know, it's not hard to imagine this bullpen being a top five in baseball, because if the three big names perform even pretty well, not necessarily their career bests for all of them, but if they all do that, and then Seth Lugo, I don't mean any insult to him with his name, it's just, I don't know, the other three are probably a little bit more well known across baseball. You could have something there, but I'd be more giddy about all this if they had shot for a higher tier in terms of starting pitching than the one that they did. And in the bullpen, if they had, even if, dude, I like the Patonsis signing a lot given his extreme upside, but just adding another arm or two to say, all right, teams are going to be rolling with 8-man bullpens this year, you know, let's add one or two more major league relief arms, especially given that so many of them signed for fairly reasonable deals over this winter. So yeah, I don't want to be too much of a downer here, but I'm apprehensive. There is definitely a way this plays out where the back of the rotation is fine. You know, the bullpen guys are all great. Cespedes is playing regularly and destroying the totally not juiced baseball that I assume will still be in use this year. And Alonso and McNeil and Conforto. I mean, you know, there is a serious core of young talent here. And Rosario finished the year in a way he could get in on all that. So, yeah, I'm rambling a little bit. But I think the Mets will win more games than they lose. It's just I don't know if it'll be 83 or significantly higher than that. In a season that ends up being a dominant one.
Yeah, I think I more or less echo your thoughts. I'm probably a little bit more optimistic at this point, if only because I guess there are two things that I am really willing to sort of lay on the line, and neither one of them are exactly hot takes. Number one, I do not think it is possible for Familia and Diaz to have both seasons as bad as they did last year and for the Mets to stick with them through that. Like, I think a big part of why the Mets stuck with both those guys last season was because historically they weren't those pitchers. So you're giving them time to prove that this performance is a blip on the radar. This is not a normal part of your game. If Diaz looks as bad in May as he looked in May of last year, he will not be pitching in high leverage situations. And so I think that you're not going to get those bullpen blow-ups, at least from the same guys you did last year, right? So, and I also think that just, you know, relief pitchers are volatile, and both of them have better stuff than their numbers showed last year, so I think they will be better. But even if they're not better, there's going to be a shorter leash on them, and therefore I think that that will lead to a better bullpen one way or the other. Not that I have a ton of confidence in the guys who would step up and fill their roles, but I think you understand what I'm saying. That's the first bit of optimism that I have. The second bit of optimism that I have is that I'm not going to say that 2020 Rick Porcello is the same as 2020 Zach Wheeler, because he's not. But I think that 2020 Marcus Stroman and 2020 Rick Porcello is probably better than 2019 Zach Wheeler and 2019 Jason Vargas. And so you're looking at an overall improvement, at least in the first half, from last year. And I think that if the team just had a if they won just five more games in the first half, the end of the season would have been a very different thing. And so I think all you have to do is you have to get this team to a place where they are in the mix come the trading deadline. Because by the trading deadline, we may have some intimation of who the Mets' next owner is going to be. I'm not saying it's going to be done by the trade deadline. But, you know, if it's a situation where somebody emerges as a front runner and maybe, you know, they are having a little bit more influence on the team, maybe they can convince the Wilpons to spend. Maybe the Wilpons will want to spend to make their last season as owners ones where they go out with a ring on their finger. Or maybe just, you know, there's always good players available at the trade deadline. So to me, you just have to have a Mets team that is 5 to 7 wins above where the team was come the All-Star break last year for me to feel like it's been a successful first half. And I think that with the bullpen and with the starting pitching being both on paper better than last year, maybe, I feel fairly confident.
Yeah, I like all that. I certainly hope Porcello is better than Jason Vargas was last year.
Yes.
Jason Vargas is still a free agent, I think. I wonder why.
Bring him home, Mets. Bring him home. No, don't. I'm just joking. Do not bring him home.
Hey, Matt Harvey is still a free agent, too.
Yeah. That's
a free agent in denial of, like, you have to try to be a reliever, dude.
Yeah. I would sign Matt Harvey the reliever.
If he was fully on board with, I'm going to pitch in relief, and, you know, that I'm going to embrace that role. I don't know that that would lead to success, but it sure seems to me like that's his only chance to play in the majors again. Nobody's signing him as a starter at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not going to happen. And I don't know why. I mean, we've all heard that he has, a healthy ego, shall we say. But I can't believe that he's not trying to extend his career at this point by pitching in relief.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little odd, but if he decides to do it seriously, I'd take him back in a heartbeat as a fan, you know?
Yeah. I don't think a lot of people would agree with you, unfortunately, but that's a whole other conversation for a whole other day.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, I'm Jesse David Fox, senior editor at Vulture, and host of the podcast Good One, a podcast about jokes. Every week I interview a comedian, writer, or performer about one of their jokes. The joke can come from their stand-up special, a Saturday Night Live sketch, or a song, or even a book. We break down the joke and figure out how it works, what inspired it, and what it says about their sense of humor. For comedy fans, it's a serious discussion about the craft of jokes. And for interview fans, it's a really funny conversation between two people who have a lot to say about comedy. For fans of sex advice podcasts, it might not be exactly what you're looking for, but maybe you need something to talk about after all that sex you're having. New episodes of Good One come out every Tuesday starting February 25th. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app. From Vulture and the Vox Media Podcast Network. Have a good one.
So we both focused on the pitching when we talked about both our hopes and our fears for the season. How do you feel about the offense right now?
Pretty good. I mean, look, it's easy this time of year to maybe go into things and say, like, hey, you know, this guy's going to be his best self about all of them. And we know that's never how it works out, or it rarely works out that everybody's on at the same time, you know? But you look up and down the lineup, and there are some solid hitters on this team. You know, I mean, obviously McNeil and Alonso led the way. JD Davis's playing time and role, I guess, is still somewhat to be determined, but we know he can hit. Dom Smith, kind of the same thing. If Cespedes is fully healthy, Smith and Davis both have similar, men without positions, but who hit very well at the major league level last year. So, you know, to have all that and then still have Conforto and Nimmo and, you know, Wilson Ramos is a solid hitter. I think, you know, you'd love to see a great year out of him. And Cano, I think, is better than what he showed last year. So it's pretty easy to look at the lineup and say, oh, hey, look, everybody in that, you know, that the top eight slots of the lineup is fully capable of being an above average major league hitter. I guess Rosario, it might be a little premature to say that because he still hasn't done that over the course of a full season. But I think given his age and the way he looked last year, especially since it seemed like he was growing and developing as the year went on, which I think is more important than just saying, oh, his second half split was great. Right. If it's, you know, if you're seeing a guy who was having defensive struggles and not hitting all that well early in the year make progress in all facets of his game as the year goes on, I think that observation is more meaningful than just a hot finish to a season. It's not unreasonable to think that you look at WRC plus that everybody in the lineup could be 100, which is league average or higher, and there's not a whole lot of teams that have a realistic shot at rolling out a lineup that can do that. So that seems nice, you know. And then if Cespedes is able to play, it's about if his body is able to take the workload. I think the talent is still there, and the drive certainly is there with the video he made recently with featuring Andy Martino's voice prominently criticizing him.
You hate to see it.
Yeah. But I think this will be a very good team at the plate. I think you can get a couple guys could take steps back, but you could still end up with just a very solid lineup. It's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be the Twins in terms of shattering home run records and leading the league in offensive production, but I think they could kind of sit in the upper tier, you know?
I mean, maybe, you know, look, we're in spring. Everything seems possible right now, and I know that I'm gonna get an email later this season laughing at me for saying this, but I mean, in the National League, if you leave the Dodgers out of it, is there a team that just on paper is a better offensive team than the Mets?
Trying to run through the whole National League in my head right now.
I mean, in the West, if you're not named the Dodgers, you're not.
Right. I mean, even last year, the Mets had the second highest WRC plus as a team in the National League.
Yeah.
That's not everything. The Dodgers were ahead of them, and the Nationals were behind them, and the Nationals scored almost 100 runs more than they did. So there's
right.
There's more to it than that, but there's enough there to say, like, maybe this team is pretty good. But yeah, the Dodgers adding Betts is just like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if you're just going down the list, I think maybe it's tough because, I mean, and the reason why we like metrics like that one is that they put some context around ballpark and all that. I feel like the Braves, though, you know, last year they were just slightly behind the Mets in that metric. You know, they might have a case at being better, but they lost Donaldson. You know, the Nationals lost Rendon, and those two guys had monster seasons for those teams.
Absolutely.
Last year. So then, and I guess the one other one that comes to mind is the Cubs, of just like, you know, they seem to be waning at this point. And their ownership tried even less than the Red Sox this winter. Like, have they still not signed a major league free agent or something similar to that?
It's something like that, yes.
Yeah, I mean, maybe at this point, I'm sure somebody has signed a major league deal, even if it was a low dollar one. But, you know, Rizzo, Bryant, Baez, that's, you know, that's a really good trio. The rest of that lineup can be very good. So yeah, those are the teams that come to mind for me.
Yeah,
which I think makes your point seem pretty valid to me.
Right, and so, you know, I'm not saying they're going to set records, but I could certainly see a case where the Mets are number two or number three offense in the league. I think when you couple that with the best pitcher in baseball and very capable two and three starters and potentially three lights out people in the bullpen, and that's not counting Familia. I'm just saying if Lugo, Betances, and Diaz are all on, that's three excellent relievers, not counting Justin Wilson, who had a solid second half, or Brett Brock, who had a solid second half, or, you know, Familia. You know, the Mets have a chance to have a top three offense and a top, let's call it, five or six pitching staff. And that, I think top five or six pitching staff might be a conservative estimate, if everything goes well. Which it won't. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm just saying, if you look at the raw materials on the table, I think the Mets are in a really good position to surprise people this season. Or maybe surprise is the wrong word at this point. To live up to the expectation that's there for them.
Yeah.
I recognize it. This is all going to be very funny in a few months. but it just feels to me like just the raw materials are there for this team. I also think something we haven't talked about really, you and I have not talked about at all, but I think that people are forgetting also, is I know that the average major league manager only wins or loses their team about three games a season, but Mickey Callaway was a really bad manager last season.
Yeah.
And lost the team a bunch of games early on that they did not have to lose. And so, you know, if Rojas is even just the most bland league average manager, that's a very good thing for the Mets.
Yeah.
Jeremy Hefner's back, man.
Sure is. I like it.
Did you hear the DeGrom quote about Hefner?
I read...
Or not quote, but what he did when he got to camp?
Yeah, yeah. Who was it, Tim Healy or somebody else? I think it was him. I feel like it was Newsday.
Yeah, I think it was. Basically, for those that didn't read it, DeGrom sought Hefner out because Hefner was, I believe, the assistant pitching coach or the bullpen coach for the Twins last year.
Yeah, assistant pitching.
And DeGrom went and found him, basically said, the Twins, you know, ate my lunch the day I faced them. Was I tipping my pitches? Was something you saw? And he basically said, no, they just had a good day and you had a bad day.
Yeah.
But just the fact that I love that DeGrom sought him out for that, and I love that Hefner apparently has a good enough memory for this stuff that he could answer the question honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love, especially having a cousin who's a diehard Twins fan, who that fact has come up many times on this podcast, having that feedback from a Twins fan about how much they own DeGrom and all that. Like, I like that it still bugged DeGrom too.
Yes, absolutely.
Because, you know, I'm it, in the moment, it's like, oh man, I wish we could face DeGrom every game. And I'm like, stop. You fucking Twins wish you had a pitcher who was half as good as this
exactly.
dude. But I like that it was eating him up. You know, because I think most people appreciate it, but like at the end of May, nobody was talking about DeGrom repeating it as a Cy Young winner. You know, and it wasn't even that, like, oh, he's terrible or anything. It's just that was not a topic. Even when I wrote a thing about, like, you know, he could win this in, like, July, I think. I'm going to guess July. I'm going to be too lazy.
That sounds about right from what I remember.
Search for it. Maybe early August, somewhere around there, where it was still, like, he had ground to make up, but he had started to get on a roll. Even at that point, saying, you know, he could win the Cy Young again. Most people were like, oh, yeah, man, he's been great, but
August
probably
2nd.
Not. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people were like, hey, I'm rooting for it and all that, but I just don't see it. And then he went and did it. So, obviously, I'll take full credit, but.
Well, have you seen a lot of writers are basically saying they expect him to repeat it again?
I've seen the topic come up. I guess I haven't seen people saying they think it's going to happen, but that's just me missing things.
I mean, one of them was like, I think it was The Athletic did a like bold prediction special, and that one, two people in there, I believe, said that he would repeat, but that's trying to be bold, right? That's a little different. But I've seen, and I want to say that the Vegas odds are relatively high for him repeating, and I've seen a couple other people tweeting about it, you know, how they believe that it's a possibility. And, I mean, almost nobody has done that. You know, what is it, three pitchers ever?
I think just two, right? I think it was Mussina and Randy Johnson. Obviously, Clemens has racked up a ton of the award.
Right.
But to do it that many times in a row, I think those were the only other two.
Yeah, let's see. Greg Maddux and Randy Johnson.
No, oh, I said Mussina. I meant Maddux.
Yeah, Maddux and Johnson. It's crazy that only 21 pitchers in baseball history have ever won it more than once.
Yeah. Yeah, that was elite company to join already. Hey, I think he could do it.
Yeah. So, you know, again, this is the time for us to be optimistic, right? Let's be optimistic right now about this team, and let's have a good excuse to go into this trip with some real optimism, because things are going to suck, things are going to go poorly, but you know, for now we don't have to think about that. We can just enjoy it for what it is. All right, well, let's talk for a minute about the ownership situation. So, the last time we had spoken was the Steve Cohen news. I guess it had been out there for a few months, right?
Right. The, you know, they had officially put it out there that they were, you know, working on this deal with him and all that fairly early in the off season. You know.
Yeah.
Not like right at the beginning, but early enough.
Yeah. And so that has obviously fallen through, and we don't really know why, and we likely never will know why, and that's okay. But the Mets have, the Wilpons have said they are going to sell the team, and if you believe what is being written about, it will be a more traditional sale where there may not be years of control for the Wilpons baked in, or at least not as many years of control baked in. So the name that has come out as a front runner, and there's probably lots of people who are at the exact same level of interest, but they're not world famous folks, so we're not hearing about them as much. But it's your friend and mine, Alex Rodriguez, the for, as we used to say, the former future Met.
Yes.
You know, A-Rod. And I think there are a lot of facets to why A-Rod is a polarizing choice of potential manager. So just like from your gut, what do you think about the Mets being owned by A-Rod?
I'm all for it. It would just be absurd. You know, I like that in his second act, he's been this sort of like endearing baseball nerd. Like what a strange path he's had, you know, in terms of being one of the best players of all time, you know, who dealt with his fair share of scandal, for, you know, baseball related things. And then kind of having this very public persona and being out there involved with a lot of the biggest broadcasts of baseball, you know, on a national stage. So it's, I don't know, what better way to top all that than owning the team he rooted for as a kid? And as well as he's done, I think it's clear it would have to be a situation with somebody. I don't think, maybe I'm underestimating, but I don't think he and J-Lo could just like outright buy the Mets. I mean, I feel like Jay-Z and Beyonce maybe, but I don't know. I feel like being worth, even if you're worth $3 billion, can you actually like hand that money over to the Wilpons tomorrow? You know what I mean?
Right.
I'd imagine it would be something similar to the Jeter situation where, you know, there's some money of his going in, but it would be part of a group, that kind of thing. But, you know, having A-Rod as like the face of ownership. The one thing I would say is that I guess as much as I'm all for it, for the absurdity and all that, at least if he was a meddlesome owner, like the ones that currently own the Mets, at least he's been there. Like, at least he had a Hall of Fame caliber career, whether or not he ends up getting voted in. You know, he did all that, and he knows what he's talking about. You know, an owner should still let baseball operations have independence and do their job, but I guess... You know, at the very least, even if he had all the other traits in common with the Wilpons, he would know a lot more about the game. So I would see that as an upgrade.
Yes, I agree with that.
And you know, A-Rod helped coming to the Mets in some form and helping them win a championship would be like an extra, you know, FU to the Mets who sort of botched getting him when he was young.
Yeah. So... the reason that I am not as optimistic about him as you are has almost nothing to do with his, like, so I, a friend of mine is a big Yankee fan who is, shall we say, he can be a bit of a prick when it comes to talking about the Mets stuff. And his question to me was like, well, he cheated before. Does that make you afraid that he will cheat again? And that do you want to get caught in a scandal with a cheater as your owner? And I don't really think that that's a true, like, it's kind of a false equivalency to make. But I would hate to hear all the press coverage of A-Rod as Mets owner. That's part of it. I also think he's just such an ineffectual, terrible interview that his press conferences will be a total bore. Not that really matters, but that's part of it. And I don't hate A-Rod. I really don't. I just don't know if I want to be around him that much as a Mets fan.
Fair enough. You know who will be over the moon if it happens is Ted Berg.
Oh, man. Ted will love this. Yeah. T- Ted will absolutely love this. That's an excellent point. Do you have any... I guess your point stands that if the meddlesome owner, at least the baseball player being a meddlesome owner, but do you think that... Like, one of the things I think about Steve Cohen is, and I have no evidence of this, it's just sort of my gut here, is that if the guy has never worked in baseball before, he might be more willing to let baseball people do baseball stuff.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's part of my fear too, I guess.
Yeah.
So, it's a funny story. I was coming home from a concert, which we'll be talking about later, a couple of days ago, and I was in a Lyft to come home, and the driver saw my Mets cap and asked me about the Mets and said, you know, my daughter went to college with Jeff Wilpon. I said, really? What'd you think of him? And he said, she thought he was really fucking stupid. And and he said, you know, even then, people were talking about how he's too dumb to run a major league team and how that team is going to be doomed when his dad dies. And so I'm just happy we're not getting saddled with that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, here's hoping that a sale happens. You know, it's time. I guess the most encouraging thing is that the Cohen deal falling through didn't negate the ownership group's overall desire to sell.
Yes.
You know, this wasn't, oh, hey, here's the only guy who's going to sell this team. I'm sorry, the only guy who's going to pay for this team.
Right.
They know damn well that these are, these major league franchises are sought after. You know, it's kind of nice to be able to print money.
Yeah.
Especially if you also happen to like baseball. So, yeah.
Yeah. Is there any other A-Rod stuff you want to discuss?
No, not yet. If it, you know, if it actually turns into like a serious thing, I look forward to talking about it a lot more. But yeah, we'll see.
What else do you want to talk about? I feel like we had a couple more things on our agenda, but I can't remember them at the moment.
I think we touched on them. I think, you know, with the early spring training things, the, you know, Familia having lost 30 pounds. There was one story today. Edwin Diaz was asking for feedback from Jed Lowry, who is supposedly cleared to do everything in terms of workouts and drills and all that kind of stuff. Even though when he showed up with a gigantic brace on his left knee, there was still no explanation of what the injury actually was or confirmation that he would play in spring training games. That weirdness, you know, coupled, that weirdness is its own thing. But, you know, Diaz trying to get different feedback, and Seth Lugo. Oh, we didn't touch on that.
Oh yeah, Seth Lugo
fracturing, broke his pinky toe in his hotel room.
Did he fracture it rather?
Yeah.
I don't think it really matters, the pinky toe.
Right. Yeah. No. I think it'll be fine. Especially pitchers who aren't, you know, running anywhere near as much as like an outfielder or any offensive player, whoever gets on base.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a, if you had to pick a bone to break, probably be a good one to pick.
Yeah. They're saying he can't pitch for 3 days, so.
Right.
So we may see him pitch even with a broken bone in a week.
Yeah. So yeah. But yeah, just, I guess that flurry of little things and you know, Stroman commenting on, proclaiming that he has the best core strength in Major League Baseball, and hey, I support that confidence. I would not make the claim myself, so I'm glad somebody feels that confidence.
Do you think you're the best core from Mason Avenue?
No, I'm going to just say no by default, even though it may.
I definitely don't, so I'm comfortable saying that.
Yeah, no. I mean, we have, like, if you include everybody, there are people who are still, like, in or shortly out of college.
Yes.
And just by default,
they're struggling.
They win.
Yeah. softened by time.
Yeah.
And beer.
Yeah. These things happen. But yeah. But yeah, I will say, Stroman, I just like his whole approach, his confidence. He gets a little into a weird thing every once and now, once and again, sorry, on Twitter. Just weird, like, health stuff that I'm like, I don't know if that's scientific, but okay, sure. You've got a whole thing going on. He's a very likable guy. He's interesting. He's unique. And perhaps most importantly, he has a shot at being a top, 15, 20, 25 pitcher in baseball, which he hasn't done every year, but he's had those seasons where he's been up in that level. And I think that kind of got forgotten a little bit when people were like, oh, why did they trade for a guy, at a time that they were not contending? So yeah, he's very likable, and it would be nice to see him remain a Met, especially if he, pitches anywhere near like a solid number three or better.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if there's anything else we really have to touch on. If listeners have things they want us to specifically look into when we're down in spring training, or players you want updates on, or anything else, tweet at us. Let us know what it is that you want us to do. And, we would love to get some input on that. So, before we close out here, Chris, what is your music pick for this week?
So, I'm going to go with a record that I haven't heard that many times yet. But a little backstory to it, I've recommended some Kikugaku Moyo records on the show in the past. They're a fantastic Japanese band. I recommend the records and certainly their live shows. And they did not play Desert Days when we were out there this past time in October of 2019. But we had made some friends over the course of the festival on the campgrounds, and obviously in that context you're talking a lot about music. And Kikugaku was touring shortly after, and we've seen them a bunch of times. We couldn't make the New York show, but we really like hyped them up, and these friends that we made who are out they're out in Tucson went to the show, and we've stayed in touch, and afterwards they're like, raving about how great Kikugaku was. But then the opening band, another Japanese band, Manami Deutsch, they had raved about. So I had it on my like to-do list for listening for a little while, and then in just like a Spotify mix or Discover Weekly or whatever, one of the things in Spotify that I was just letting it do its thing, one of their songs came on, and I was like, oh yeah, like I've been meaning to do this, and it just kind of forced it. The record came out in 2018. It's called With Dim Light. It's pretty good. I recommend checking it out. I haven't listened to it enough to have like a, have mastered the topic of the record, but our friends out in Arizona were right. It's definitely an interesting band.
Say the name again for our listeners.
Yeah, Manami Deutsch. So Minami is the first word, and then Deutsch is what you would expect. Yeah, their records are on Spotify, Bandcamp, all that stuff. And I think they're sort of blending like different influences, like different styles of rock in general to get to where they are. So yeah, that's my recommendation.
Very nice.
What about yours?
So I do try and pick new records a lot of times when we do this, but I got a rep for an old favorite this week. On Friday and Saturday, I went to two concerts by my favorite live band of the moment, Ween. I have now seen Ween 6 times since 2016, and over those 6 times, I have heard 105 unique songs, because their set lists vary greatly. I have not seen a show with less than 9 songs I had not heard before, which is pretty incredible when you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
And so the shows were fantastic. I was in a better spot in the room on Friday night, but I have downloaded recordings of each show. Ween is a very tape-friendly band, and I think that Saturday night's show was probably the better show. I was both in a worse part of the room, and I met up with an acquaintance there who got very drunk very quickly and was trying to talk to me throughout half the show.
The worst.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Don't go to shows if that's what you're going to do.
Listeners, don't do that. Don't ever, ever do that. But just amazing. But the record I want to focus on from them is not my favorite record of theirs, which is The Mollusk, which everybody should go out and listen to. It is an absolutely incredible record. I want to talk about Quebec, which is their second-to-last record thus far. It came out in 2003, I believe. And so when their most recent album, which now is over a decade old, came out, Dean Ween, the guitar player, said, "This new one is a party record. The last one was a Jonestown party record," and which is saying how depressing it was. And a lot of it was written while the singer, Gene Ween, Aaron Freeman, was going through a divorce. So it's a very, very dark record. But it is where I think Ween was able to blend sort of the more... I mean, all their records are experimental and weird in their own ways, but the couple before this, I guess, had more traditional song structures to a lot of it. And so this has some, like, very unusually structured songs, but it also has their biggest swings in terms of going for, like, epic songs. There's a song called The Argus on it, which is basically like a Yes song in all the best ways. This is where I think their songwriting became just super confident, and they realized they can do anything they want to and they can pull it off. And so this has everything from acoustic ballads to instrumental noise pieces to some songs that maybe verge on the comedic to just these big epic songs. The last 3 songs in the record are just amazing. Alkin Road, The Argus, and If You Could Save Yourself, You'd Save Us All, which has one of my favorite lyrics of all time. It's a little bit rude, so I'm going to warn the listeners now. I'm going to say a not nice phrase at the end of it, but it's the wheels came off, the bottom fell out, the checks all bounced, I can't. And it's just 4 different ways to say things went wrong, and it's an amazing record, and it's a record that's really sad and really really beautiful, but also really messy, and yeah, it's great. And Ween played 7 or 8 songs off of the album over the 2 nights I saw them this weekend. So yeah, that's my pick, Quebec by Ween.
Right on.
Yeah, I gotta get you a Ween record one of these days. We have to make this happen. So yeah, like we said, next week we're gonna be at you with a couple of shows from Spring Training. I'm sure there'll be other Amazing Avenue audio shows next week as well, but you get plenty from me and Chris. Until then, go to AmazingAvenue.com. We are starting our season preview series this week. So we've done one so far on Jerry Smilia and Wilson Ramos and J.D. Davis and a few others. So go check those out. Oh, we were going to talk about how J.D. Davis and Jake Marisnyk apologized for being Astros.
Oh, yeah.
They apologized for being Astros.
Yeah, hopefully... it's not ideal, but hopefully... You know, they can maintain good statuses with their teammates.
Yes. Davis was barely an Astro, I feel a little bit better about that than I did Mariznick, but we'll see. It's certainly not ideal for Mariznick to come over in this offseason. Like, Davis had a year before all this started, before all this came out, rather, to get in with his teammates. You know, Mariznick is coming in with this hanging over him. Although, yeah. I will argue, I bet players care less about this than a lot of fans do.
They might. I think it probably varies, similar to how fans have kind of varied, you know?
Sure. I just think that cheating in sports is way more widespread than we realize, and that players have to be against it in public, but don't really care otherwise.
I can see that.
But anyway, so AmazingAvenue.com has all that stuff for you there. You can also find Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can find this show on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can let me find this. You can email us. We haven't done an email show in a while. Next time, maybe we'll do an email. You know what? Send us emails when we're in St. Lucie. We'll do an email show one of the nights we're in St. Lucie if you have enough emails. That'll be fun. So
yeah, that'd be good.
AAAudiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at Brian Needs a Nap. Chris is at Chris McShane. And until next week in St. Lucie, let's go Mets.
Mm-hmm.